From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2022, when the United States saw a record number of suicides. That year, 49,500 Americans died by suicide. The largest increase were seen in men over the age of 75 years old. As the Los Angeles Times reports, men over 75 were dying by suicide at more than twice the rate of men younger than 25. The rise in suicide among men, especially middle age and older, is now well documented. The question is, what can arrest that trend? What can slow it down? In 2023, 1 year after that new American record, our country saw 49,300 suicides, almost exactly the same number. And yet that very mild decline saw a sign of hope. U.S. suicide rates had been rising for nearly 20 years. Columbia University public health professor Catherine Keyes told the Voice of America News that a leveling off of any increase in suicide is cautiously promising news. And she pointed to a two-year-old national crisis line that allows anyone in the United States to dial 988 to reach mental health specialists. We are seeing the early signs that that kind of resource is capable of working. In our region, 988 is often talked about in conjunction with 211. 988, the National Suicide Prevention Line. 211, a number to call to connect with a wider range of resources. Suicide prevention, yes, but also food access and housing and health care. Last year, the service received more than 174,000 calls in our region. We are not trying to be alarmist on this program. That's not what we do. We try to be real. And right now, many Americans are feeling the stress, well, that can lead to kind of a crisis. And this is a chance to better understand what resources are out there to help. And we're going to do that this hour and talking about 211 and make sure that you or someone you love understands how to use it. And let's talk about that this hour. Jennifer Lakes, the president and CEO of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. Goodwill of the Finger Lakes? We're talking 211. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having us today.
Better give a quick explanation for why Goodwill of the Finger Lakes is here when we're talking about 211 and crisis prevention.
Well, as your listeners know, Goodwill is so much more than a store, as we like to say when I'm here. We actually, thanks to people shopping and donating, are able to operate 211 and 988 across our region. So we're the agency for the blind, we have sustainability programs, and we are so proud of the fact that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we are answering the literal call or text or web chat and saving lives and connecting people to resources, all thanks to the money we raise in our stores.
Well, let me welcome as well Deborah Turner, who's Director of Crisis and Referral Services for Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. Deb, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And welcome to Sue DiPiazza, who is a customer service specialist for Goodwill of the Finger Lakes and has a remarkable story of her own that she's going to be sharing. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Jen, do you think most people in our community know what 211 is yet?
I don't. You know, in conversations when we talk about 211, you know, I get blank stares and I say, well, it's an easy access dialing number and more blank stares. And I say, well, you know, 911, and people know what that is. And you used to be able to talk about 411 and no one really
knows. That's
not
like a thing anymore?
No. You know, so I'm like, well, okay. So from any phone, you can dial 211 and get connected with an individual who can help with any type of human service concern. And you don't have to be in crisis, is what we like to tell people. So you might want to know if there's a way to volunteer in your local community. And it's all zip code based so that you get connected to resources around you or what's relevant in your life and in your needs. So it could be a health-related concern. You were recently diagnosed with a condition and you want to know if there's a support group or an agency to help you, or very severe things, food insufficiency, you've lost your job. So really anything related to human service need, you can dial 211 and get help in that moment, and we'll get you connected to the right resources that can help get you back on track.
So we are not having a conversation that is expressly political this hour. In fact, the work that the organization does is apolitical. It's nonpartisan, of course. I mean, it's community service for everyone. So let me ask a question that just seeks to be direct and realistic. A couple of weeks ago when we saw the freeze, the federal freeze, which was, I don't know if rescinded is the right word, or corrected, clarified, perhaps. There was 24 to 48 hours where a lot of people were wondering, like, is that it for Medicaid? I mean, is no Medicaid or even SNAP food benefits, food assistance was in question. Did that have a ripple with 211, or was that, did that start and stop too quickly for you to experience it?
You know, I think the, you know, it's always both and when we get asked these types of questions. I think whenever there's uncertainty in the community, there are ripple effects with people who live with the constant pressures of everyday challenges with their finances, you know, with figuring out where their next meal is coming from. It's almost the one more, you know, straw that just breaks the camel's back when you really think about it. And for a lot of local leaders, it's also exacerbating situations that already exist. And, you know, so even our own team members are kind of dealing with some of those same challenges around our funding sources and wondering how we're going to keep answering the calls or an increase in calls, you know, with our own uncertainty.
And let me ask the same question to Deb about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there an impact that you feel pretty quickly at 211 when there is confusion, uncertainty about resources, even if it's short-lived like that?
We do. I mean, I think even if we don't get all of the influx of calls about the confusion, which we did see a little bit, just mm-hmm. people wondering, what do I do? What, you know, what resources can I access? I think it was short-lived enough that we didn't see a long-term. But something else to know about 211 is because we hold that comprehensive database, if we start to draw the lines of, okay, these organizations might start to get impacted, we'll proactively start conversations with them to make sure, you know, what we're listing, is it up to date? Is it accurate? Do you need us to pause on sending referrals? Just so we can stay in tune with any ripple effects, kind of like what Jen was saying, or murmurs of ripple effects, that we can stay on top of that.
What's your short description when people say, what is 211?
We are an easy-to-remember phone number, because no one remembers 800 numbers. they call us to get the 800 numbers. But we are a 24/7 confidential information referral hotline that can do this through phone, chat, or text. And we also have a website that's available for the community to search for free.
988 is targeted at suicide prevention. 211 has to be more broad-based. I mean, you have to be pretty well trained to help people and get connected. Yeah. Kind of have to know all the keys to the castle, it seems like.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that a fair description?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we're really fortunate in this community is because we are blended. So most 211s do not do crisis intervention, do not do suicide prevention work. They may do a very quick assessment and then do a warm transfer to a hotline, but we can handle it all in-house, which is very unique.
And I want to ask Jen, a little bit about what's going on in Washington, if that could affect what your operations are and what you're capable of doing. And listeners have been asking a lot to WXXI the same kind of question I'm about to ask you. So I will say that our CEO, Chris Hastings, put out his own kind of a statement, and we'll share on social some of what our CEO had to say today about protecting WXXI and about sharing the impact of what we do. I think every organization, I mean, Goodwill's doing that, XXI is doing that. We're all looking around going, okay, a lot of uncertainty, and there could be some pain, and we want to make sure we get out ahead of this. And so we're trying to do that in a way that is positive, that is strong, that is arms linked across the community, and we'll continue to do that, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that at XXI. For you at Goodwill the Finger Lakes, what is the story, and what's the possible impact of what you're seeing?
So I think first off, we at Goodwill the Finger Lakes talk a lot about living our organizational values, which is living Goodwill Blue. And, you know, no matter what, that will never change. You know, that's the foundation of why we do the work that we do and how we make decisions at our organization. And, you know, it really is apolitical. And we exist, you know, really to elevate, you know, people, community, and planet for a good today and a better tomorrow. That's our mission. And that's not going to change. you know, I think when we look at funding streams, you know, we are blessed in that we have our Goodwill stores, and that gives us a direct avenue to not only give things a second life, but to also provide employment opportunities and really allow individuals who have barriers to employment the opportunity to work and really earn good living in those jobs. We also have our manufacturing and contact center positions that are directly experiencing some of the challenges at the federal level, because it's not about just the executive orders and the freezes. It's also about the federal procurement process. And so we're a federal contractor, and the Ability One program provides jobs to people who are blind. And so we have had a significant drop off in all of our sales of the self-stick, you know, where the 3M's our supplier. So we make self-stick products, or what people would call Post-its, their branded name, as well as some of the other things that we do. And we're the lead hotline. Again, we have great contact center competencies. And so, you know, DOGE is in the EPA right now. And so, you know, as we think about those challenges, you know, we just want to do what we do every day, keep showing up for community, keep connecting people, and not being afraid to say to people, you know, now when you have the opportunity, you know, when you need to buy, you know, a new decorative item for your house, or if you need a new clothing item, if you could go to the Goodwill store first, you're supporting the programs, because we need your support now more than ever, just like public broadcasting. And we appreciate that everyone's challenged, but we know that this is going to persist, and the community will need these calls to be answered. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we continue answering them for another 20 years to come.
Not to get too far down in the weeds, so I promise we're going to get right back to 2-1-1 and really spend the hour on this really remarkable stories of what this this service can provide. But the way I would think about it, at least from our perspective, is I think there's some confusion about how much funding and where it comes from and what we do. And so we try to tell people all the time, especially when there's pledge campaigns, that the majority of our funding comes from me and you know, and sustaining members, people who have $5 a month or 10 bucks a month or 25 bucks a month. That's the majority of it. That's the backbone of what we do. Yes, there is a, I would call it a smaller but significant piece that comes from different sources, at federal level, for example. But the reason it's not partisan is that, yeah, of course we're going to advocate for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm fighting for Fred Rogers here. Like, I'm not afraid to do it. I believe in it, and I believed in it for decades. But you know who also believes in it? Like a ton of Republicans and a ton of Democrats. Some of the biggest advocates for public broadcasting, for Fred Rogers, for XXI, have been Republicans. It just so happens that the current administration is a Republican administration. But this is not a partisan issue. Not to me, not at all. And we're going to advocate for us. And in the meantime, we're going to be straight with the community about where we are. And is that kind of how you view it? You say, look, I want people to understand when we say it's nonpartisan. Okay, there's an administration right now, but we're not against anybody. We're just advocating for what we do.
Exactly. So when you look at, SAMHSA funds 988, there is proven research that, you know, being able to answer the call when someone is in crisis literally saves lives. When we look at the downstream cost savings from having 2-1-1 be there to get someone connected, keep them from moving from, if you're stable and you lose your job, the faster you get connected to some of those resources that keep you from moving from stable all the way down to crisis. So maybe you get to at risk. But if you can kind of get some early intervention, it's like everything in life, with some supports, the faster you acknowledge there's an issue, get connected to some resources, get back on your feet, it's better for everyone. And I really think that is why the majority of these things really are bipartisan, because, you know, as humans, we want to keep people thriving and get them connected. And the majority of people really understand that. And I think that's what we want to dial into. And, you know, 2-on-1 day gives us an opportunity every year to, number one, talk about that there's this cool 3-digit number you can call that's free. And, you know, our community has embraced it. And we really, because of goodwill, really underwriting it, thanks to people shopping at our stores, we've allowed it to be used for so many other community services in a way that the Finger Lakes region and Rochester and Monroe County really benefits from, because the community really gets that. And it really all works together collectively.
How many stores do you have around the region?
So we have 11 stores with a couple more set to open later this year.
Okay. And how many people do you have working on 2-on-1?
We have, for the 2-on-1 Lifeline program, about 80 employees.
80.
I would say that's supervision, quality assurance, frontline. You know, it takes a lot of infrastructure to support bringing people on. You know, like our training program is 3 to 4 weeks. We also tap into veteran staff to help with mentoring. We call it a nesting period, where people get comfortable, you know, or a little uncomfortable with the lines, just so they can have that extra support. We have a clinician on staff as well who supports when there's some support that those frontline staff hear, because we hear a lot of really difficult things, and yeah, vicarious trauma is very real for our team.
Yeah, so some generic examples, no specific cases, but the kind of calls that you might get this week would be, here's one, here's another. What are what are the kinds?
Yeah, we get calls. We have lots of frequent callers who call back. You know, some are elderly, some have disabilities where they're feeling lonely and they're struggling. They're not sure how to get access to the resources they need, whether that's transportation, food, or just socialization. We get calls. Probably the biggest ones right now, because it's the cold season, is homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. You know, folks reaching out because they're just not sure what to do. They just got evicted. You know, we have folks that are living on the street and they don't know where the shelter is or how to access it. We're getting a lot of calls around housing as well, that people are struggling to find affordable and safe housing in our community.
And the reason I opened the program talking about a little glimmer of hope in the national suicide numbers, no one is celebrating. I mean, in 2022, when we hit a national high in suicides, mm-hmm, nearly 50,000 suicides, I mean, it should really horrify all of us. And so when you see a little downturn, even a little one in the next year, after roughly 20 years, set aside one pandemic year, mm-hmm, 20 years of a march upward.
Yeah.
And you've got people who analyze this stuff going, you know, like 988 may be working here. I bring it up because these kinds of resources, 988, 211, I mean, I'm an evidence guy. I'd like to know if it works. But there is evidence that when people have services, mm-hmm, outcomes change versus when they have no idea where to go and they feel entirely isolated.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's a fair description?
Absolutely. You know, I think the pandemic in particular, it kind of blew open all these issues that had been brewing for quite a while, where it kind of forced people to reach out who traditionally wouldn't have, to have these conversations. I think, too, there's been a shift in what's acceptable to talk about with suicide. You know, I've been doing this job for over 10 years at this point. You know, I started at the front lines, and I have noticed the shift even in having conversations about it.
How so?
Well, just there's more of a willingness now.
It's not as taboo, I guess.
It's not as taboo. Mm-hmm. It still is. You know, I think in a lot of communities, it's still uncomfortable to talk about, but I have noticed a greater comfort, I think, in people talking about it, that mental health is real. And I think there's a lot of driving forces behind, like, why that conversation is now more acceptable. But I think 988 is an incredibly valuable tool. I mean, suicide hotlines have been around for quite a while. It just hasn't been as studied as it has been, I think, because SAMHSA is now behind it more. Definitely in the clinical settings, like hospitals, CPAPs, those traditional clinical settings it has, but suicide hotlines haven't been until, I would say, the last 5 or 5 to 10 years, there's been more data coming out about it, like you said.
You said you started on the front lines.
I did, yeah.
You mean taking calls.
Yep, yeah.
Can you describe what is required for someone to have the right touch to do that?
Empathy. That's absolutely number one.
You got a lot of good people taking calls?
We do. We have a lot of people who have lived experiences. They may have experiences with trauma, experiences with poverty. You know, we of course, they share what they want to share about that, but we see that as only something that adds to their ability to build rapport and connection. You know, because clinicians have a place. But I think in particular on the 211 line, on the 988 line, there's something about not talking to a clinician that I think people feel comfortable with. You know, of course, we give training on assessment, on the technology, on the tools, but we can't train empathy. That's something that someone has to have innately in them to do the work.
Jen, how's the staff do?
They're amazing. And, you know, when we talk about that non-judgmental presence, it's phenomenal. And we really specifically do try to hire people who want to do this work. And there is a balance. I should add that not everyone with lived experience is a good candidate for this. So we have a great hiring process that allows people to understand what some of the types of calls would be and decide for themselves if it's something they can handle. And then on the flip side, with 211, it's also a good bridge for people who are hesitant or are really uncomfortable or maybe had a bad experience with seeking some type of counseling or mental health supports. Because you can call in and talk about the what and maybe not the why. So you can focus on, you know, I need this or I'm having problems with a thing. And by talking with our counselors, you still get that acceptance and that acknowledgement of, wow, you're going through a really rough time. You know, other people would be struggling. And, you know, it's amazing that you're calling to deal with what you're going through. And so what we've found with people is even if they're not seeking a referral for behavioral health or mental health services, just by kind of calling and having that conversation, they end in a much better place than before they started the call. And so, you know, we're trying to help people understand that too, that because we know that in certain cultures, there really is a stigma to reaching out and getting help. And so that's why 211 is such an amazing vehicle for people to have a good experience. And I think that is why people call back for other things and really establish that 211 is a go-to place. So when you said, do people know what 211 is? I think people are starting to. But if you've called, you definitely know what it is. You start to tell other people about it. And then you call back as you have another need or kind of want to go to that next level.
I have to imagine that the bulk of the calls, like the bulk of the calls we get, skews a little older. So in the connections feedback, we get phone calls from an audience that probably skews a little older because that's what they're used to. And we get everything from everyone who has my number will text me during the show. It's amazing. But also all kinds of other communications that skews younger. And I wonder if there's a generational divide. Do you see, you know, people in their 20s, small number, maybe 30s, a little more, 40s more, 50s more on up? I mean, do the numbers skew a little older in terms of who calls 211?
For 211, predominantly it's still the phone. I think that's still predominantly the mechanism they use.
And but so the age corridor of people using it is older or does it?
It's all different ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
All different ages. For 988, we absolutely see a very stark difference.
In what way?
So with chats and texts, we do get very young audiences. So,
oh, okay. So 211 is just a phone line. 988, you're saying?
No, but it's 211 has all of the
That's
modalities,
what I thought.
Too.
Yeah. Okay,
it
okay,
does, so, it does. But right. it's still predominantly people choosing to call. And I
see.
Think,
so most of the time when people use 211, they are calling it.
And I think it's because they're dealing with complex problems that they may not be sure where to start or how to explain it.
Okay.
Versus with 988, you know, you're feeling a certain way and and so you're chatting or you're texting in a way that's an easier entry point. But with 211, you kind of are explaining some background and some different things because you're trying to deal with a situation more.
Yeah, it makes sense. No, I'm glad to hear that people are calling. I mean, anybody who's got kids who've used phones, they're like, why did you call me? You could text me. Like, who calls anybody? And, you know, we hear that all the time from younger adults. And I'm glad to hear that people are using the service. And
I will say, though, our website does get over 100,000 utilizations. So there are a ton of people that are going to our website or using My Wayfinder, which is the Together Now portal that leverages our database to do some self-navigation. So for sure, there's a whole host of people not calling us, but utilizing our resource database as well.
More than 174,000 calls in the last year in the region? That's the number
Correct.
We have?
Yeah.
It's a huge number.
2024, we had about 210,000 contacts. We're still processing all the data, but that's a lot. So that's phone, chat, text.
Yeah, and the vast majority look like actual calls to 211. It's a huge number. When we come back from this break, you're going to hear Sue DiPiazza's story. It really is a remarkable one, and we're talking about 211, its growth. In our region, you think 211, you might think 988 suicide prevention. 211 is a number you can call really for. I kind of think they would say call if you need something, and they'll figure it out. That's what they do. Jennifer Lake is the president and CEO of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. Deb Turner is director of crisis and referral services for Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. And Sue DiPiazza, customer service specialist. And Sue's story on the other side of this only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, how would you feel if the speed limit was reduced in the area where you live? Would that be a good thing? Would that prevent more injuries and death? That's just one of many ideas. There's a bicycle spine network proposed, pedestrian priority zones. It's all part of Vision Zero for the city of Rochester, aimed at reducing or even eliminating pedestrian deaths. And we'll talk about how next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Joel writes in to say 911 also will take a text. Good information to have. If you want to access 211, more than 200,000 contacts. You can call 211, but what else can people do that you want them to know to get in touch, Deb?
They can text us at 898-211. They can chat with us through our website or look at the resources on our website at 211lifeline.org.
Sue DiPiazza is a customer service specialist, which means what? What do you do now with them?
We have a food service department at Goodwill, and we serve all the Monroe County senior sites, and we have 10 daycares, so I manage that.
Do you love it?
I love it. Yep.
You love working with people?
I love working with people.
You're someone who has understood at various points in your life what it is like when there is a crisis, and I want to take a step back and give you a chance to tell people a little bit about yourself and maybe how you kind of got to this point. So take me back to an earlier part of your life, and the floor is yours.
Okay, thanks. In 2001, I was arrested for drinking and driving, and I had my 9-year-old daughter in the car. So I am a convicted felon, as well as a grateful recovering alcoholic. I have 24 years. I just celebrated that on February 7th.
Congratulations on that.
And Goodwill gave me that chance. So in my journey, I had to go from rehab to a halfway house. And in between the two, they weren't ready for me yet at the halfway house. I was blessed enough to be able to stay at Bethany House. And my story is I was stayed there for 3 weeks, but I actually volunteered for the next 15 years. And that was my first encounter with 211. Bethany House was a shelter for women and children. And we also had diapers, formula, food. We were emergency housing. At the time, it was very private. The phone number was not out there, but 211 had us. They would call, women, marginalized women in the community needed diapers, needed food, needed a safe place to come to stay for the day, we'd have the officers calling through 211. They had a domestic violence situation. They would bring a mother and a child to the house in the middle of the night. I was blessed to be there that night and witness it, and we were able to get the woman out of the county the following day. So those were my first encounters with 211. After about a year of my sobriety, I had lost custody of my daughter, naturally, because I certainly wasn't a good parent at the time. But I got custody back of my daughter, and she began, and when she was 12 years old, we were walking home from school one day, and she wanted to die. So our journey into the mental health field started. She was hospitalized 13 times over the next 10 years, and part of the treatment plan, her safety plan, when leaving CPAP or Strong at the time, was to, if she felt like suicidal, was to call 275-7575 was Lifeline at the time. And through different parts of the journey, she decided at one point to overdose, and she took some pills. She did what she was told, and she called 211.
After the after taking the pills?
After taking the pills.
She called 211.
She called 211, and she talked to the counselor on the other end of the line and told them what she had done. He had told her, you need to go down and tell your mother. And I'm staying on the phone until I do talk to your mother. And so she did. She came downstairs, and she told me. And she put me on the phone, and he said, do I need to call the ambulance? And I said, no, I'm right up the street from Highland. I'll take her up. So 211, literally, I've seen the lives it has saved. It saved my daughter. She's now, proud to say, 33 years old, studying to get her master's in social work, and working with the mentally challenged people.
Doing well?
In today's, yes, doing great.
Wow. She stayed on the line with him.
She stayed on the line. He talked her into staying on the line.
So this is a kind of a clumsy question, but how does she stay on? She clearly had a relationship or felt like she was comfortable
enough. He developed that relationship with her, yes.
Because, I mean, I am not the expert here, and someone's going to correct me in a second, but a lot of people in a crisis moment like that might hang up the phone, might not make the call.
Yeah, exactly.
And your daughter stayed. She makes the call, and she stays on the line.
Exactly.
You'd be surprised how often that happens, that people stay on the line.
Get right
on
the mic for me there, Dan.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. but that story, I mean, as powerful as it is, it's the kind of story you've heard in other places.
I've heard it. I've done it. Absolutely. And it, you know, I think it's, we call it the finding the turning point, finding what is their meaning for living? Why did they reach out? And trying to really suss that out. And, you know, I've met your daughter. Fantastic. I always get like a little teary with that, just that connection, because we don't always know what happens at the end of that call, but it's just always wonderful to hear outcomes like that. So being a counselor in the past on the lines, it's that rapport. It's that I'm not here to yell at you or to judge you. You know, you reached out because it's evident you want help. And that's the starting point of the conversation. And that makes a difference. You know, I've talked a lot of kids into letting me talk to their parents. And it's usually they just don't know how to tell their parents how they feel, and they need help doing that. And they may have formal supports like a counselor or a therapist, but sometimes just having that person that they don't know helping with that conversation makes a difference.
That's why I look at those numbers. I mean, those suicide numbers, they're horrible, but these are the stories that you know they could be worse. Mm-hmm. And not everything 211 does is that acute. I mean, certainly sometimes it's just resource connection. It's, mm-hmm. I need transportation, don't know where to get it, or, you know, need understanding on food assistance and either programs or services available. But everybody listening can probably think of it. If I said, look, what's the worst day of your life? Don't say it out loud. Just think of it. Everybody in the audience listening, you could think of something. Did that have a permanent effect on the rest of your life? Could that have gone worse? And was there someone to intervene and help? And it seems to me like part of what 2-1-1 does is say, like, we can be there at the worst moment if you need somebody there. And it might change the future. I mean, it did for your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing thing. And I apologize for my ignorance being like, I can't believe she stayed on the phone
because it's okay, they do it.
But that's building a real relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad to hear that she's doing well. Go ahead, Deb.
Yeah. No, I just, that's suicide prevention. You know, I think even starting further back of that education, you know, for your daughter, like here is a safety plan, here's things you can do. And even encouraging people to reach out before they have those thoughts, that is absolutely suicide prevention too.
Just got a question from the audience. Is it 24/7, 2-1-1?
It is. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 mm-hmm. days a year. Your 2-1-1 in the Finger Lakes region never closes.
Okay. Someone else wanted clarity too. Did you say that these three-digit services, including 911, would take a text? My understanding is they do. Again, it was an audience member telling me 911 mm-hmm. will take a text. I'm sure they do. I mean, you're all trying to be on multi-platforms like we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Sue, let me just kind of close the loop there. Your daughter's doing great.
Mm-hmm.
Getting her master's in social work, I'm reading.
Correct. Yes.
That seems appropriate.
Awesome. Yeah.
And she's using her incredible talents to help other people.
She's
too.
That peer support that we've all talked about. Those of us that have had that experience are your best valuable resource.
Wow. And how are you doing these days?
I'm doing awesome. I'm trying to plan my retirement. It's a gradual process, but it's in the process. And I'm just extremely grateful to be able to be here to share my story so that at least if we affect one person and one person hears what help we can be to them, I did my job.
There's something else that really stands out to your story, to me, Sue, which is that you get arrested for felony DWI. Your 9-year-old daughter was in the car.
Correct. It was before Leander's Law. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you lost custody of her.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Everything you have said in this interview is like you could write a book on what accountability sounds like. Like you owned it.
Yes.
But not everybody who's gone through what you went through gets custody back. That's work.
Correct. It is.
I mean, that's not guaranteed that you're ever getting custody back
no.
at that point.
And she told the judge, she drinks again, I'm out. At 10
years
old.
Do you blame her?
No, not at all. And I'm still accountable to her to this day. That's, after 24 years, I'm still accountable to her.
That's an amazing story. I mean, that's a really beautiful story in so many ways.
Well, thank you, Evan.
I know, it really is. Because there was no guarantee it was going to go, that your life was going to go so well.
No.
Look at all the people you're helping, and your daughter's doing great. And yep. It's a great story. We're talking 2-1-1, and Sue is part of the team at Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. Jennifer Lake is president and CEO of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. Deborah Turner is director of crisis and referral services for Goodwill of the Finger Lakes. So now let me ask all of our guests about, I don't want to overly emphasize just one category of a population, but there has been a lot of reporting on the rise in suicides among middle-aged and older men. And some of it you hear that it's because people are losing jobs or not being able to retire or not being able to work until retirement or mm-hmm. can't support a family, losing jobs that may have a sense of identity. Some of it's just social disconnection, I think. But again, this is not my expertise. And so let me start with Deb. I mean, does your work at 2-1-1 or does 988, does that reflect in our region? I mean, have we seen more concern in that category of people about suicide ideology, ideation, that kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely. We're very involved with a lot of initiatives around suicide prevention. So one that comes to mind is Partners Against Suicide, which is the Monroe County Suicide Prevention Coalition. And we work in partnership, not just, you know, yes, call us, but what other organizations are also touching this population. You know, we think about veteran populations. We think about, middle-aged men who, you know, I think there's a different stigma attached with expressing their feelings. Mm-hmm. Like on a personal note, I think about what my father went through, you know, and he didn't know how to talk about his feelings because that's just not what was encouraged or talked about. He struggled with depression, and it's interesting as an adult now looking back on that time and those behaviors, it makes complete sense now to me. But he just didn't know how to talk about his depression. And I think that's where building up communities and other initiatives to encourage these, you know, whether it's a high-risk population, to encourage that conversation among people they feel comfortable and safe to do that. Just thinking about that, very emotional tonight, apparently.
And you mentioned veterans too.
Yeah.
Of course, we know the reporting and the concern among suicides among veterans. Mm-hmm. Has 2-1-1 locally been a resource for veterans in crisis?
Absolutely. You know, it's for anyone. Anyone can contact us. You know, we can help get them to what's called a suicide prevention coordinator that each veterans mental health outpatient clinic has. That we have those contacts in our system. You know, I think in particular with veterans, firearm safety is a number one priority. They can access those gun locks actually from law enforcement if they wish. They don't have to ask questions. They can ask for them and get them for free. The Veterans Crisis Line actually gives those out as well for free just to encourage that extra step or that extra measure to help them feel safe.
I was reading an article recently, I think this one was in The Atlantic, about, of all things, masculinity culture, especially with like the targeted advertising of male products. Mm-hmm. So if you're, say, a 45-year-old male who works on a YouTube show where the cameras make it look like you might be balding, I mean, you know, maybe occasionally you look up like, hey, does this product work? And if you look up one thing, you get deluged for the next, well, the rest of your life. Every time you're online, it's like, here's a shampoo, here's a pill, here's a product. And, you know, the data isn't great for any of them. But what The Atlantic was exploring was a company called Hims, and I think there's a Hers that goes with it. Mm-hmm. But it's these products that are making us convinced that if you're a man and you're aging, that's not okay. And we are here to stop it. And, you know, whether it's hair loss or, you know, the lines on your face and all these things. And the larger point was not just about whether the products work. It's about what we think of ourselves as we get older. And so I actually started thinking about that in conjunction with these stories about men who are losing their identity and feeling like, well, I was supposed to work in the same job for 40 years and now I can't. And I don't feel connected to things and I don't know how to talk about it. There's mm-hmm. still a stigma about men talking about certain things. And I just feel like we're still a little backwards with that. You know, I mean, again, anybody who's taken Hims or whatever, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want, it's great. Rogaine doesn't work that well. I'm a pretty good at testament. I don't know. Who knows? Not for me. But I try to be realistic. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to be realistic about what happens as we age, what our identity is, what work is, and then how to stay connected. So I'm curious to know from your experience, with all the empathy that you can provide to people, when you talk to someone who is feeling isolated, mm-hmm. maybe their kids are grown and they've moved away. Maybe they don't have a church or a community that they belong to. And maybe they don't have the job that they used to have. What do you think about talking to them about that might help them see things a little differently?
I think it could, absolutely. So the radio viewers know, I am a 30-year-old woman. So for me to pretend to know exactly what it's like to be in that person's shoes is unrealistic. And I think it's starting with, you know, what are you concerned about? You know, what prompted you to call? How are you feeling disconnected? Like, tell me more about that. And it'd be a lot of active listening. You know, I think if we're empathetic enough, we can at least relate to some feelings that someone may have. Like, I can never pretend to know exactly what it's like to be that person whose children have, you know, mm-hmm. flown the nest and I'm retired. You know, I have a toddler right now, so I'm very much in the opposite circumstance.
Yeah, right.
But just finding finding what that feeling is that I can relate to, at the very least. That feeling of loneliness, I feel like every human has experienced at some point in their life. And I think helping them suss out, you know, where would you find meaning? And something at 211 we can absolutely do is, you know, hey, how would you feel about maybe contributing some of your experience back to the community? Have you thought about volunteering? Have you thought about...
It's fantastic.
You know, maybe coaching. You know, if you have an excellent background and a career, you know, maybe there's a way for you to give back in that sense. Because I can appreciate, you know, having experience and then not always having a place to have an outlet for it. And I can't imagine what it's like to retire. And I know, Sue, you're closer to that journey. Maybe you can weigh in on some of your...
Everybody feels differently about it. I mean, like my mom used to say, all I want to do is wake up in the morning and have no one need me. And my dad used to say, the worst thing would be to wake up and have no one need me. Mm. Everybody's different.
True.
But Deb, clearly you are a remarkable listener. And I think what your testimony this hour reveals to us is that we may think we are more connected with technology, but we're not doing a great job of feeling connected and feeling heard.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that leads to other than I hope more people know that you're there. And that's partially why we're here this hour. We're talking about 211. It's as straightforward as that. And yeah, Sue, you are looking forward to retirement, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You want to wake up and have no one need you? How does that sound?
Exactly.
Yep. pretty good.
Only one cell phone. Yep, perfect.
Everybody's different. I mean, that's been the hardest thing for my father, who, by the way, I mean, you know, love you, Dad. He's probably not listening. He's in Cleveland. But, you know, I mean, he's talked about his own depression in ways with his doctor that I can't believe I was hearing him say. I mean, great.
That's awesome.
Definitely talk about it. Yeah. That's the way.
It's like half the battle.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just talking about it or putting the pieces together that maybe something isn't right with how I'm feeling. That's hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Sue, you and my dad are just different. My dad's just decided it's too hard to wake up and feel like you're not needed. Mm. And everybody has different needs, but he has gotten better at talking about it. And I'm proud of him for that.
That's great.
And I hope we all can. So in our last few minutes here, before we go, I want to ask Jennifer Lake, who's the CEO, president and CEO of Goodwill of the Finger Lakes, to remind listeners, if they're just kind of checking in here, we've been talking about what 211 does here. But how does 211 fit in the broader framework of Goodwill? Because you've got, I'm looking at, again, 70, 80 staffers for just 211. I mean, how does that fit in the constellation of Goodwill?
So those 80 team members are part of the 800 or so people who make up Goodwill. And it is one of our community programs. So many people just think about Goodwill as our stores, which is phenomenal. We want your donation, so thank you, because when you donate and when you shop, it allows us to invest in having those 80 employees. You know, over, I think it's 80% of the funding comes directly from our own Goodwill operations, and we couldn't do it, you know, without all of you. And, you know, same thing with our programs for people who are blind or our Goodwill Learning Academy for people with an incomplete education. So, you know, oftentimes we get asked why we sell things that are donated to us, and it's absolutely to fund these vital community programs and also to create employment opportunities for individuals that other employers sometimes pass on, for people who really want to work but maybe don't have the skills or maybe haven't had the life experiences, and maybe haven't been taught the proper work habits. And that's what we do at Goodwill is, you know, we see the value in people's used stuff, and we also see the value in every person.
And earlier this hour, you mentioned, you know, some of the stuff that's going on in the federal government. You mentioned that, for example, DOGE is in the EPA right now.
It is.
And so are you concerned that some of what DOGE could do might have unintended downstream consequences that could come to organizations like yours?
So one of the things that Goodwill does that a lot of people don't realize is we operate the lead hotline. So we have about 10 full-time employees that answer those calls, and they are all individuals who are legally blind. And so that contract is on an extension right now. It's a 6-month extension, and we're not sure what will happen. So it's the lead hotline that when you buy a can of paint or you rent an apartment and there's lead paint and, you know, it, you know, or your child eats some paint chips. Mm-hmm. We answer those calls. And so, you know, I think that just given general sentiments, we're nervous about those people's jobs. And that's a lot for us to absorb within our organization. On this flip side, while, you know, we don't have a ton of direct federal grants, the federal government buys a lot of the products that we make. And those sales have really flatlined since the election. So a lot of the office products we make or just reductions in the federal workforce mean that we won't be selling those products. And, you know, that makes sense. But we appreciate everyone shopping our stores instead.
Well, I know that's it's a tough time for a lot of organizations, but also that's why organizations like 211 are out mm-hmm. trying to make sure that you understand what it is that they do, what services are available. People like Deb and the remarkable staff and Sue and the whole team. And I guess we'll see. We'll check in later this year. But on this 211 day, I guess. It's 211 day. Is that right?
It is.
I never know what day it is. It's always another day. But every day is 211 day. For the team there.
24/7.
Thank you for being here. Jennifer Lakes, President and CEO of Goodwill the Finger Lakes. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Deb Turner, Director of Crisis and Referral Services. Thanks for telling your story.
Thank you.
And Sue DiPiazza, I hope you get to retirement sooner than later, but you know what? Thank you for telling your story as well.
Thank you.
Best to you and your family. More connections coming up in a moment.